Accession number 30286, Reel 2.
Bill Jones, Reel 2. Bill, can you take me through your first operation?
Yes, the first operation was to do some mine laying, to lay a mine off the coast of Saint Nazaire on the Atlantic coast of Brittany. And you hear over the tannoy gardening tonight, one in beech, one in artichoke, I remember. And that was the sort of code for mine laying. So we had an afternoon briefing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 1500 hours as you called it then. And the plan was to take off at 1555 and reach Saint Nazaire just after dark, so that we could find the area, drop the mine, was called a cucumber, and then beat it back home. We set off, and this is from St. Evelyn in Cornwall, and Don Sisley gave me a course, navigator gave me a course. Out we went to sea, fairly low down. This wasn't a high flying thing, about 200 feet. We went down well away from France, of course, flying to a couple of sea positions before turning into South Saint Nazaire and the coast, the French coast. And I remember the wind dropping and the sea becoming calm, and with a glorious sunset, I can remember it now. Don's navigation was quite faultless. He was absolutely spot on. And at about 6:15, it was nearly dark, I think, then, and we crossed a small island near Saint Nazaire and found the coast, started to look for the mouth of the Loire, which was where we were going to drop. And we found the right place, all right, dropped the mine without any mishap. And it was fairly easy to see because there was a hazy half moon, I remember, and one or two lights on the ground, presumably from patriotic Frenchmen. And we were lucky, we saw nothing in the way of opposition. And back we went home. That was our first op. The whole trip took 6 hours, and we were pretty tired by the time that had finished. But I remember that one other aircraft which went out to do mine laying that night was lost. It just didn't return. So it felt a bit apprehensive when you go on your first stop, but it's a bit like going back to school. And but as soon as we'd done the air test, and from then on, felt perfectly normal. I was interested that we were all calm and collected, and it was not a problem.
Is it a tiring thing to do, though?
Oh, it's very tiring, yes, it is. 6 hours, flat out. 6 hours of concentration. And it is hard concentration the whole time. And 6 hours of it is quite tiring, yes. When we got back, we were very pleased. The squadron were very pleased. They thought we'd done well in our first op, and we were warned, don't be too overconfident because you've done well in your first operation.
What was the kind of next stage for you with that? Because that was late November, wasn't it?
That was late November. Well, the next stage was that we were going to go to the Far East, to Ceylon.
Was the whole squadron going to move out?
Yes, it was.
What was the reason for that?
The reason was that at the northwest tip of Ceylon, there was a naval station, and it had been attacked by the Japanese, and we were sent out to protect it in case the Japanese tried to do it again. They didn't, in fact, but that's what we were there for.
So what had happened, obviously, between late November, because that would have been early 42, wouldn't it, that you decided to move out? Did you carry out any more operations?
No, not an actual operation. We did I think it was then that there was a great flap on about the Scharnhorst and knives now.
That would be early 42.
Early 42. And we were all put on alert for that. Though, in fact, nothing actually ever came of it. But we did a lot of very... what's the word? Very heavy practice flying. But it never came to anything.
Was the role changing, really, in the kind of English Channel for that kind of operation that you've been doing? Was that disappearing a little bit on that by that stage?
I'm afraid I have no recollection.
What preparation did you have to make for this move to the Far East?
Oh, preparations. Well, we were kitted out with... sorry about this. Yes, we were all packed up. The aircraft were all packed up for tropical stuff. And I remember the first. It was going on to March now in 1942. Where we were, I don't know whether this is of interest, we were allotted a particular aircraft, which was a W6525, which number which sticks in my mind, because it took about 4 days to get it completely ready and packed. And then we were to take off in the late afternoon. And... it was a dud aircraft. It was we seemed to get up when you're going to take off, you open up the throttle to full throttle to get up speed, and then when you get up to flying speed, then it gets off the ground, off you go. This particular aircraft seemed to get up speed slowly, far too slowly, only just got off the ground. So there was something wrong with it, and it was with great relief that we got down again, and we told the ground crew that there was something wrong with the aircraft. It wouldn't. I'm sorry about these pauses. We hoped things would settle down, but found that what you did, you take off, you get airborne, and that you get to your height that at which you want to fly, and then you throttle back to a cruising speed, and this was a standard. I can't remember what the speed was, but it was a standard cruising speed, and. This particular aircraft, when you throttle back to cruising speed, it wouldn't maintain its height. So there was obviously something badly wrong with it. And we were very glad to get down again, I think I said earlier.
And you'd be unhappy, obviously, being allocated that one to fly to the Far East with, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, there was no way were we going to take that to the Far East. I told various people what had happened. And... somebody made a brainless suggestion that my cockpit drill was at fault. Cockpit drill being the checks you make when you're flying or before you fly. And anyway, it was given to a test pilot to find out what was wrong with it. He had the same result, but I never heard the final result of what happened to it. It was just a bit dicey at the time.
So you were allocated another aircraft?
I was given another aircraft, yes. A very good one, a Mark II, which we were very pleased with.
So how did the flight going about? How did you get organised for this long flight?
Well, we did it in stages, of course. And the first trip was from I think it was where we were, Port Reef, we were taking off from, to Gibraltar. That was the first stage. Had a bit of a scare on the way halfway across the Bay of Biscay because one of the engines started popping. And we thought, oh dear, we may have to ditch. We can't keep going on one engine. So we turned in for about halfway across the Bay of Biscay, as I said. We turned in back in towards land, and after about half an hour of heading for Spain, the engine seemed to pick up again, and it seemed to be all right, and we had no further trouble with it.
Would the Barfoot fly on one engine?
It would, yes, just about. We would have struggled along. Yes, you could do it on one engine. One engine fly was one of the things you practiced, of course, during your training on it. But so it was all right. We had no further trouble.
But had you turned into land just to help your chances should there been a problem with the other one?
Yes. So you wouldn't expect to fly a long way on one engine. It would be that you could manage enough to get yourself to land.
So did you arrive at Gibraltar okay then?
Yes, we arrived at Gibraltar with no petrol left, and we landed first time, which was fortunate, because one of the things you have to do from time to time, you make a bit of a bounce in your landing, and what you do then is you open up the throttles to take off, go round again and make a second landing, and that's bound to happen from time to time, because you could never land perfectly every time. And we had no petrol left. The tanks were empty when we landed the first time. We'd been in the air for 8 hours, and we were all very tired. Actually, if I just refresh my memory, we had 8 gallons of petrol left. It wasn't actually empty. 4 or 5 minutes flying.
Did you stay over in Gibraltar?
We stayed the night in Gibraltar, and we were we learned one of the other Beauforts was lost on the way, we were very tired, hoping for a bit of a sleep, but we were up at 5:30 the next morning for briefing at 6:30, plan being to fly the next leg to Malta in daylight formation. And that's the time when Malta was under constant air attack from German airfields in Sicily. So we took off from Gib at 8 o'clock, I think it was. It was a beautiful day, sparkling sea. And so on we flew and on towards Malta, ready to pick up the formation if necessary. Fairly loose formation, flying close formation is extremely difficult. It's immense concentration, constant adjustments of the throttle, sweat pouring off you. So we stayed at some distance from each other, just keeping each other company. And we had another slight scare. The engine started to pop again, but it was all right. And then this was the stage where I think it was Don said something like, "Oh, a couple of kites going ahead of us, Bill." And I had a look, and it took me, I think, a thousandth of a second to recognise it as an ME110, a German twin-engine firefighter, which turned behind us. And so we opened up to full throttle and did a lot of swerving, flat to the sea, We were, I suspect, within 1 or 2 feet of the surface of the sea, and we were had to swerve without banking at all, because if we tried to bank, then the tip of the aircraft would have hit the sea. So we were dodging. I had a good commentary from Rog in the rear turret, told me what this ME was doing, and it kept shooting at us, and we saw spurts where the bullets were hitting the water, shells were hitting the water, but we didn't get hit. Don thought, he said we were so low that he thought he was more worried about us hitting the sea than he was about getting shot down. So it worked very well. I remember feeling the adrenaline flowing there, and so we were all right. But we lost the others, of course. Having been in loose formation, we then lost the others. We were then on our own, and having swerved about, of course, we had no idea where we were. And again, we had only just enough petrol to get ourselves to Malta. In the end, we gained a bit of height to try and make radio contact, and we sent off an SOS because we could see the tanks were nearly empty. And the answer we got was wait. That was the answer to our SOS. Then, by pure chance, we found Malta. It's extremely lucky. And again, we got down on a small airfield there because it was the first available landing ground. And as I say, we hadn't got any petrol. So again, we made the landing first time. The crew at, this was at Lucca, one of a small fighter airfield. And the ground crew were very good to us there, and they filled us up with petrol, and off we went to how far, I think, was it? No, not so far.
Did you land at how far and go on to Lucca?
Yes, it was only a 5-minute trip to the main airfield.
It looks like here, Bill, you landed at how far and went on to Lucca.
No, the other way about. We landed at Lucca and went on to how far. When we landed at Lucca, how far was under attack from the German aircraft from Sicily. But they'd gone by the time we got there.
Bill, you know when you were attacked by the ME-110s, was that the technique that you would adopt? You would go as low as possible?
Yes.
What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, it's very difficult for the chap shooting at you to get his guns bearing on you with his nose pointing down, because then he's got to go into the sea if he's not careful.
So what was the situation like when you'd arrived on Malta then?
It was all right again. We were off again the first thing the next morning for the next leg. And it was interesting because for some reason, which I'd never really understood, the German fighters based on Sicily were unable to take off in the dark. So the idea was that we would get away from Malta before daylight, so that they wouldn't be there. And it was all right. We were supposed to take off together in flying formation, but it was misty, your Perspex windscreen was all misted up, so taking off was quite dicey. And I had Don with his head stuck out of the window giving me signals as to whether we were straight on the runway. We were supposed to take off in order, but I saw a green light, which was the okay to take off, so I took off, and we never saw anybody else.
Where did you fly to?
Then we flew to, hang on, I'll have to refresh my memory on this. Landing ground called Fayoum, some 20 miles from Cairo. I remember as we got towards Cairo being absolutely magically thrilled to see the pyramids in Egypt. And I remember thinking to myself, if I hadn't been doing this, I would never have seen the pyramids from the air. Anyway, we got to the landing ground and heaved a very big sigh of relief. We'd flown from Port Reith to Cairo in 51 hours, all told. About 22 of them were spent flying. So we were just about tired out.
Did you have any time off when you got to Cairo?
Yes, I think we did. We found we were going to be there for about a week because the aircraft all had to be checked after the long flights. And
did you make any visits into Cairo?
Yes, we did go into Cairo, yes. We were able to visit Cairo, rather dirty and smelly sort of city. Small boys with blacking brushes would pursue you and can't hope to get away unless your shoes were spotless. Favourite trick was to sneak up behind you and splash blacking on your shoes so that you had to stop and have them polished. It was all, everything was very cheap. The shopkeepers were interesting because they were all immensely courteous. They would get you in, give you a cup of coffee, and they didn't seem to mind if you didn't buy anything. That was very interesting. And I remember on one occasion we were in a shop and looking at some rather nice sort of boxes, Ormiro boxes, and we didn't buy anything. I turned round and my elbow caught a pile of these boxes and they crashed to the floor. And we thought, oh my God, now what's this going to cost us? Nothing at all. Our protestations were waved aside. No trouble at all. Please don't worry. So it was a sort of customer service was absolutely marvellous.
Were you based outside at the landing ground?
Yes, we were based at the landing ground, yes.
What were conditions like there, Bill? Were you accommodated for that week?
A bit primitive. We only had three blankets on a camp bed, and we weren't sorry when we had the orders to fly to another landing ground near Alexandria. Flew down the Nile. Well out amongst the sands and first taste of a sandstorm, which wasn't very nice.
Were you on the ground when that occurred?
Yes, we were.
What was that like, being in a sandstorm?
Everything's blotted out and sand gets absolutely everywhere. Every possible crevice of your body and...
So what was the next stage then? Did you move on?
Then we went on...
Was this at a stage where you might have been required to fly operations in the Mediterranean? Was there a stage there that happened?
Yes, there was a stage there. Again, I'll have to refresh my memory from my notes. Yes, we went up into the desert to reinforce another squadron, 39 squadron, I think it was. We had one, I don't know whether this is relevant, but we had to, we were going to get back from this forward landing ground, and one of the things you have to do, you know, preparatory to taking off, is to do a check, what they call a magneto drop test. You put your throttles in turn into full, and then you press a switch. It shows when there's a magneto drop too much or not. It's okay. And you're supposed to do that every time. And one of our air screws had gone unserviceable, so it had to be replaced. And it was finished just in time for us to take off and get back to civilization. And I thought to myself, well, I don't think I need bother with the magneto drop just once, so we'll take off. And then I thought, no, you silly ass, you must do it properly. So tested it, and they were all right. Then I throttled back, having done that check, throttled back, and the air screw had been put on the wrong way, and it turned pull us instead of pulling us, to push us. Had I in fact not done the magneto check and taken off, and we would have taken off all right, got into the air, and as soon as I throttled back, then that air screw would have turned round and we would have spiraled straight into the ground. So do your drill every time. So we had to stay the night there, and then we were in camp beds, in tents, in dugouts. And there was an attack by German aircraft that night. Bombs were dropped. And I remember we were in our bed listening, and the bombs were falling. And one of the bombs, in fact, hit the operations room, which was the safest place on the camp, and the operations staff were killed. And we were sort of shivering in our beds, on our camp beds, and then suddenly heard a sort of woof, something hit the ground not far away. And I think it took me about 500ths of a second to get under my camp bed instead of on top of it. So that was, but then the attack finished and they went away again. We thought that the Jerrys would be aiming to destroy our aircraft, but it was the camp itself they attacked. They could have got the aircraft if they'd had a bit of sense. Fortunately, they didn't. We went back to, as I say, to civilization, and we went to into Alexandria after about an hour's drive, which was a much nicer city than Cairo. There's a lot of beautiful buildings in Alexandria. And then we were being put up in a hotel at Alexandria, and with wonderful clean sheets, oh bliss. And we thought, oh gosh, this is going to be the sleep of a lifetime, until about 4:30 in the morning ACAC batteries started up just outside our window, and they're waking us up, of course. And Bob came down so near that it didn't go whee, it went just whoosh, and a colossal great bang outside our window. So the raid lasted about an hour, I think. Then we were able to get back to bed, and we weren't hit.